Thank you, Tony, and thank you to the organizers for the invitation to speak. I should say that this morning I'm standing in for David Geraghty, who was supposed to give this talk, but very sadly he had a family emergency and can't be here. I think Laurent sees this conference as a follow-up to the conference he and Jim Milne organized in Ann Arbor a quarter of a century ago. And it's a particular pleasure to be here because that was essentially the first conference I attended, certainly the first conference I ever spoke at. And it is quite remarkable the progress that our subject has seen in those 25 years, much of it following lines already laid out in Ann Arbor, but also some great surprises along the way. But I think even more encouraging for the health of our subject is the youth of the people in this audience. It seemed to me there's only half a dozen of us here who were in Ann Arbor. So it really is wonderful that our subject has attracted such an extremely talented group of young people, and it bodes very well for the future. Okay, so to mathematics. Let me start by stating a theorem that we've already seen several times in this conference, and I'll talk about the bit of it which I've been assigned. So we have F, a CM field. L a prime, and we're going to fix an isomorphism of the algebraic closure of QL with C, and if I have elements of one field, I will identify them with elements of the other field without saying anything further, though I suppose, strictly speaking, I should keep track of it, or equally, if I have an embedding of a field into one of those two fields, I'll identify it with an embedding into the other field, and we'll take pi, a cuspid or automorphic representation of GLN of the adels of F, which we will further assume is polarized. So I won't repeat the conjugate self-duality. I won't repeat it because we've seen the definition several times. And also regular algebraic, which I will repeat the definition of because we will need the notation. So this means that pi infinity has the same infinitesimal character as an algebraic representation of the group, the restriction of scalars from F to Q of GLN, and let me call that representation rho joule. And I will need, so rho, the joule of this thing here, has a highest weight. It's characterized by its highest weight, which I can think of as a series of integers A tor I, so for each embedding of F into C, I get a highest weight for GLN, which is an element of Z to the N, satisfying the usual condition A tor 1 greater than or equal to A tor N. And we know because of the polarized assumption that we have some equality like A tor composed with complex conjugation N plus 1 minus I plus A tor I is an integer W which is independent of tor and I. Yes. And then the conclusion of the theorem is there exists a unique, continuous, semi-simple representation R L or L pi from the Galois group of F bar over F, which I'll just denote GF to GLN QL bar, such that if I take this Galois representation and restrict it to any decomposition group, I can essentially predict what this will be. So let me write something and then I'll explain it further. If I take the associated Avey-Deligne representation, Frobenius semi-simplify it, this is the same as taking the local component of pi at V, applying the local Langlands correspondence for FV, and, well then, this I guess is a C representation, this is a QL bar representation, but we associate them in this way. And this is for all primes V of F. Oops. And further, maybe I should have said prior to this, if V divides L, then RL pi is the Ram. Otherwise, this wouldn't make sense. And I can also tell you what the Hodge-Tate numbers are. The Hodge-Tate numbers for an embedding Tor maps F into QL bar of RL pi is gotten from this highest weight here. It's A Tor 1 plus N minus 1, or the set of Hodge-Tate weights, A Tor 2 plus N minus 2, all the way down to A Tor N. Oops, and I made a mistake. I should have put a twist by the 1 minus N over 2. My apologies. Okay, so the proof of this theorem very much follows the lines suggested at the Ann Arbor conference. This theorem itself was suggested by Clausel, and indeed he outlined the approach to proving this theorem in as far as it involves the local Langlands correspondence in here. Should also mention the ideas that Cariol indicated at the Ann Arbor conference. So it very much very much follows what was suggested there. I did want to, as I say, explain the notation here a little bit further. So, within the decomposition group at V, there's the Vale group at V, which is the set of things in the decomposition group at V, which map to an integer power of Frobenius. So my Frobenius will be the geometric Frobenius, and this V sigma will be the power for any element of the Vey group, the power of the Frobenius to which it maps, quotient by the inertia group. We have then the Vey-Deligne group that can be described in various ways, but just to be different from what people have done so far, let me describe it as the group which is the product of the Vey group with the algebraic group SL2. And so my Vey-Deligne representations will be representations of this product group. And there are two ways in which we can think of the Vey group in here. We can either put it in as the first vector, or there's a sort of diagonal embedding, at least after we pass to QL bar points, which sends sigma just onto the pair, sigma, the order of the residue field to be minus V sigma over 2, something 0, the order of the residue field to the V sigma over 2. And this is done in such a way that this is not split. And then there's a unique way up to conjugation to do this. So we'll have to think about these two ways of embedding the vague group. And now I can start explaining some of the terms. Both sides of this equality are representations of this group. And F semi-simple just means, in this, setting things up in this way, just means semi-simplify. Purity for representations of this group, as Anna discussed, but in this optic, is just purity as a representation when you restrict to the first factor, usual purity. Meaning that an element of the vague group I look at an eigenvalue, any eigenvalue or all eigenvalues of it, then for any embedding of that into the complex numbers, alpha alpha bar should be the order of the residue field to the W, so that would be pure of weight W. What other terms did I want to justify or explain? So here we have a representation of GLNFV, and I want to associate to it such a representation. That comes from the local Langlands correspondence. No, I mean restricting via the first factor. If you restrict via J, which for instance what Wasana was doing, then you have to put in this more complicated explanation of this filtration by the usual weights and then something being an isomorphism. So local Langlands tells us that there is a canonical bijection between the irreducible smooth representations of GLNFV by REC FV to irreducible Frobenius, or in this optic just semi-simple representations of this group. Maybe I'll call this something, maybe I'll call this the Vedelin group. So that, I'm not going to explain that further. It's characterized, for instance, by equalities of epsilon and L factors, but it's such a thing here. And now this, what do we do on the Galois side? So we have this representation. Excuse me. We have this representation of the decomposition group. How do I get a representation of the vague group? Well, there are two cases. In the case V not dividing L, it's rather simple. That the requirement is that, let me call it the Vedelin representation of R composed with this diagonal embedding here should just be R restricted from the decomposition group to the vague group. So this is our R equals, well, for any R, but R, in this case R equals RL pi. In the case V dividing L, which is what I'm supposed to concentrate on this morning, things are more complicated, but what one has to do was explained by Jean-Marc Fontaine. He defined a complicated ring, B semi-stable, with an action which is a ring over QL non-ramified, QL non-ramified algebra, with an action, a semilinear Frobenius, an operator N, and an action of the Galois group of the decomposition group. And this commutes with these actions, and these two things commute up to multiplication by a power of P. And these actions are both semilinear for the action of this, and this is Frobenius V inverse linear. And if I take a extension L over FV, a finite Galois extension, then one can form QL bar to the N with its action via this representation R of the Galois group, and tensor it over QL with B semi-stable, and take the fixed vectors. Well, I could take fixed vectors onto GFV, but I could also take it under a subgroup GL. And if L is large enough, because of the Durham property, it was proven that this is free rank N over QL bar tensor QL L. L0, where L0 is the maximal unramified sub-extension of L over QL. So this is non-ramified and this is totally ramified. And this will inherit an action of, well, the remaining part of the Galois group, Gal L over FV, which will be linear with respect to this variable and semilinear with respect to this, an action of phi, which will be linear here, semilinear here, and an action of N, which will be linear. And I can combine this action and this action into an action of the Weyl group of FV by simply sending sigma onto sigma in here times this thing to the V sigma, the power of Frobenius it maps to, and this now will be a linear action because the semilinearity here and here cancel out. And now if I look instead at QL bar to the N tensor over L naught with respect to some chosen embedding of L naught into the coefficients, then this becomes isomorphic to QL bar to the N, and it will have an action now of the Weyl group. It will keep the N, and it will now have an action of the Weyl group of FV. And this pair of things really won't depend on the choice of tor, because different ones will be conjugated one to the other by this phi. And now the characterization of the Wedelin representation we're interested in is that Wedelin R composed with J equals this representation we've just got. And on the other hand, Wedelin R evaluated at 1 and the element of SL2, upper unipod element, should be the exponential of n. N's nilpotent, and so its exponential makes sense. And this completely characterizes, again, this representation Wedelin of R. So in either case, we have this representation. In the first case, of V not equal to L, you can recover R restricted to GFV from this equality. In the case V divides L, you can't. You require some further information. Okay, well, how does one, as we've seen, this representation RL of pi is in most cases constructed by descending pi to a unitary group and constructing this representation in the cohomology of the unitary group. In a few cases, that's not the case. In a few cases, we don't know how to realize this in the cohomology of any Shimura variety. Quite possibly it doesn't occur, and one has to construct it as some sort of L-adic limit of representations we've constructed geometrically. In the cases where we have a geometric construction, so if n is odd or n even, and we're what people call Shin regular, which is a very mild additional regularity assumption on pi infinity. Those are the cases where there is a geometric construction in the cohomology of the Shimura variety. And in the case that the pi v is not too ramified, pi v has an Iwahori fixed vector, so the Iwahori subgroup in GLN FV will be the, or even OFV, will be the things that reduce to an upper triangular matrix, reducing mod V to upper triangular. You can check directly that using a geometric argument based on the Rappaport-Zink spectral sequence, that this assertion is correct. Where has it gone? This assertion is correct. This was explained by Sugwu and Peter and Anna in the last few days. This also, maybe I should have added here, that in particular, or in addition, that these representations are pure of weight W, the same W that came into the weight of pi infinity. And not only do they check the local global compatibility by this geometric argument, they check the purity as well. And that gives the purity in all cases, because purity is insensitive to base change. It's pure after a finite base change, it's pure, and anything can be base changed so that it becomes, has an Iwahori fixed vector. So it implies purity in general. Okay. And once we have purity, again, as Arno mentioned, it's sufficient to check something, in the general case, something weaker, so it's sufficient to check that either when I compose this with J and semi-simplify, that I get an isomorphism, so Vedelin R L pi strictly to G F V composed with J semi-simplified is isomorphic to rec pi V composed with J semi-simplified. Basically forgetting the monodonary operator, or that the traces are equal, or traces equal. Again, after composing with J. Okay, well, in the case, L doesn't, V doesn't divide L, there is a beautiful argument for getting this equality that goes back in the case of GL2 to Deligne, which, as Carriol suggested in Ann Arbor, can be generalized to GLN and gives the result we want. In the case of V divides L, nobody's got such an argument to work, except possibly beyond the GL2 case, Takeshi Saito gave an argument based on the fact that the Shimura varieties in question here are curves, and for curves, when you have semi-stable reduction, there's somehow a canonical semi-stable model, but that doesn't work for higher dimensional varieties. But beyond that, there's no geometric argument. So what I want to do for the rest of my time is explain how this case can be deduced from all the other cases which are settled geometrically by by a completely different sort of argument, and this is an argument that I think nobody at the time of Ann Arbor would have predicted would be available. Okay, well, what we have to prove if that is sigma is in, let's say, J of the Vey group, then we want that Vey Deligne R L pi restricted to G F V of sigma and take its trace equals the trace reciprocity map pi to pi v of sigma. And indeed, it's not hard to see that it's sufficient, in fact, to treat only the case v sigma, where v sigma actually maps to a non-zero power of Frobenius in the unramified quotient. Such elements sort of as so many of them in the Vey group that sufficient to check traces on such elements. Well, let me indicate an argument, a very simple argument for this, which doesn't quite work, but is the basis of what we want to do. We have an admissible representation of GLN of FV, or a Galois representation of the Gavsdut-Galois group of this. After a finite base change, I can make it unramified. So I can find an extension, let me say, LV, which is finite Galois, and in fact soluble because these are local fields. And this field, well, what will it be? It will be FV bar fixed by the kernel of, let's say, rec pi v, that will, so that this representation will factor through this group, but this will may be an infinite extension, there'll be a finite amount of ramification, but there may be an infinite amount of the unramified, maximal unramified sub-extension may be infinite, but only a finite amount of that is somehow interesting. Some finite power, more precisely, some finite power of Frobenius will be central, have central image under this. So we choose n greater than naught such that rec pi v of a Frobenius lift to the N is central in the image of rect pi V. Such a thing will exist because by continuity of this representation, the image of the inertia group will be finite, and then a finite power of Frobenius will commute with that finite sort of ramified Galois group. And I want to then put also here rec pi v Frobenius. I want it also to be fixed by this. And now I have a finite Galois extension. And in fact, I could have just worked with, why don't I work with sigma? That will save writing. It doesn't matter, either will do. It might save writing to put the sigma. Sigma may won't. Sigma to the n will fix this field, but sigma itself won't. So I can cut out a subfield fixed by the subgroup generated by sigma and get some non-Galois finite extension, which has the property that rec pi v restricted here will be unramified. So rec pi v, this is j semi-simplified, unramified here. Or equivalently, if I take the base change of pi v, pi v base change to mv will have an Iwahori fixed vector. So if I base change to mv, then I'm in the sort of case that can be handled geometrically. Now, the standard lemma in algebraic number theory that when I have a local situation like this, I can realize it globally. So I can find a diagram of fields, F, L, M, which again, this will be Galois finite soluble and a prime W above V such that LW, L completed at this W, is isomorphic to this thing which I called LV, which was a finite extension of FV. And then I'm going to take M to be the fixed field of sigma, where I think of sigma in the Galois group of the decomposition group at V. So there will be W will descend to a prime here, and then we'll have MW looking like MV over on this board. And now what I would like to do is say that I can base change pi from F to M. Well, that's too strong, but I'll come back to it in a minute. Let's for a moment suppose that I can. Oh, and I should say that L and M should be chosen to be CM fields, which I can do because that's a condition at infinity and this was a condition at V, and I can arrange these fields to satisfy conditions at any finite number of places. Then the equality we want is that the trace of the Vaseline representation associated to RL pi at sigma. Well, this being the base change means the associated, this is again a CM field, we can associate a Galois representation. The Galois representation should be the base change. So this would equal the trace of Vaseline RL pi M. And now we're in a situation where pi mw has a Niewuhr-Hori fixed vector. And so by the result we had before, the geometric result, this would be a trace rec pi m w sigma. And then this doesn't really exist, I haven't said what base change should mean, but I mean, I guess it should be in particular compatible with what goes on locally, so this should then be equal to trace rec pi v of sigma, and this is the equality we were looking for. Though, note that the field M will depend on the sigma we take. Okay, well, if this extension were Galois, and a extension like, if M was equal to L, then this argument would indeed work. Base change exists in this case. But we don't know a non-soluble base change, but there's a sort of standard way around that, or attempt to go around that. One does the base change up here, and then descends down here. The trouble is, when one descends down here, it's not difficult to see that a descent exists, but one loses control of the local components of the descent. When we construct pi m in this way, we only know that the pi m at local places w base changes to L in the same way that the original pi base changed to L. That we lose a finite amount of information to some roots of unity of degree the order of this extension. There's some ambiguity in here. However, that ambiguity disappears if we know that there is an irreducible Galois representation. So if RL of pi restricted to the Galois group of L is irreducible, we can do the descent here of pi L to pi M and keep track of, with the compatibility we want, that the RL pi M is RL pi restricted to the Galois group of M. For all L, I guess. And in fact, there's no reason this has to be the same L. If we know this for any L primed, we win at this point. We can make this descent, keeping track of what's going on locally at all places. The reason for this is that the various possible descents differ by a twist, by a character, in the irreducible case. So these two representations then would have to, because we know the Frobenius is at denset of primes, would have to differ by a twist, and if necessary, twisting this by a character of this Galois extension, one could actually obtain equality at most places, the unramified places, and then one gets equality everywhere. So if we know that the Eladic representation associated to pi, and also when one constructs L, one can keep it linearly disjoint from any finite extension of F one wants. So in fact, all we really need is RL prime pi itself is irreducible. Then we choose L so that preserves this irreducibility if we have this for some, as I say, for some L primed. Because once we have compatibility for one L prime, we get compatibility for all L here. Okay, so the problem with this strategy is that it's usually very hard to prove the irreducibility of the Eladic representations whose existence was asserted Yeah. So now what I'm going to be saying is, from now on, up to now it was sort of a general introduction due to many people, but the rest of the argument is due to Toby G, David Geraghty, Tom Barnett Ram, sorry, I'm putting people out of order, and myself. So the strategy is in two steps. We first establish irreducibility for some collection of pi, and then the second step is to somehow show that that collection of pi is L-adically dense in the set of all possible pi. Okay, so I should first, I guess, describe what set of pi we're able to treat irreducibility. So to do that, I have to define a term. So I'll call pi extremely regular. Well, that will be some condition on the weight that we had over here, so that if, and I only need it extremely regular at sort of one infinite embedding, so for just one tor, so if there exists tor, such that for all subsets H and H primed contained in the set of weights, tor weights, shifted as they are to get the Hodge-Tate numbers, so these, because the A tor I's are increasing, these ones are decreasing, these are strictly decreasing, so they're all different. This is an n-element set. And if I take any two subsets of the same cardinality, or I don't even need this, but that would be a stronger assumption. If the sum of the elements in H equals the sum of the elements in H primed, then H has to equal H primed. So this is a very strong condition, but it can certainly be satisfied. For instance, if these were sort of increasing exponentially or something, then this would certainly be satisfied. So it's certainly satisfied, but it's a very strong condition. Nonetheless, in the set of all possible weights, the set of weights satisfying this condition is L-adically dense. And then the theorem is if pi is extremely regular, then R L primed pi is irreducible for Dirichlet density 1 set of primes L primed. And I mean, really, it's L primed and an isomorphism of QL primed bar with C. And what this means is for a Dirichlet density one set of rational primes, this is irreducible for all isomorphisms, QL prime bar isomorphic to C. So from this theorem, it's easy to conclude what we wanted over here. This, by the argument I sketched here, gives you the local global compatibility for these extremely regular pi at any prime L, not just the prime L prime where it's irreducible, but for all primes L, because we can make the descent. And as I said, these are adically dense, and then using the theory of the eigenvariety, as Chenevier and Harris did, one extends this result to all pi. Okay, so for the rest of my time, isn't very much, I want to sketch how one might prove this. So suppose RL pi or RL prime pi, let me write L for L prime now, does decompose into some irreducible factors. And suppose I knew that these RI were themselves automorphic. So this, certainly in general, we won't. But suppose that Ri is itself the L-adic representation associated to some cuspidal automorphic form pi I. Then we can conclude that there has to be only one factor, because there's a standard method for calculating the number of irreducible components. You look at the order of vanishing at S equals 1 of a partial L function away from bad primes of pi cross pi joule, and this will be, if pi is cuspidal, this will be minus 1, or it has a simple pole put the other way. If I have such an equality, this L function will be the product of the L functions of the pi I cross pi j joule, so this will be the sum over I and j running from 1 to A of LS pi I cross pi j joule of S, sorry, the order at S equals 1. And this will be 0 if pi I is not isomorphic to pi j, and if pi I is isomorphic to pi j, it will be minus 1. So this will be minus the number of the set of pairs ij such that pi I is isomorphic to pi j. And that will be, there will be at least a such pairs, namely II up to AA. There might be more. So this will be less than or equal to minus A. And if minus 1 is less than or equal to minus A, you better have A equals 1. So if we knew the irreducible constituents of RL pi are all themselves automorphic, then there can only be one of them. In fact, one needs something slightly weaker than this. It's sufficient to have the RI become automorphic after a finite base change. So it's sufficient to have the RI potentially automorphic. That's a little exercise using Brouwer's theorem on characters of finite groups. Okay, well, now we're in a position, a great deal of progress has been made in the last quarter century, following the breakthroughs of Andrew Wiles, on the automorphy and potentially automorphy of Galois representations. And in particular, we now have a theorem available due to the same four authors I mentioned over there, that if S is a CM field, L is greater than 2n plus 1, and R maps the Galois group of F to GLN of QL bar, is unramified almost everywhere. Well, so unramified at all but finitely many primes. If it's a polarized, which is some condition that R conjugate composed with conjugation by complex conjugation is R dual, epsilon minus m psi for some character psi, which actually comes from the maximal totally ramified subfield and has a definite parity. Won't say it all. If it's crystalline in the Fontaine-Lafay range, by which I mean the length of the Hodge filtrations is bounded by L minus 1, and the field, base field, is unramified at L. Let me check what else I need. And if the residual representation R bar, R mod L, I think it's restricted to GF of the L cyclotomic extension of L is irreducible, then R is potentially automorphic. Yes. Yes. Regular. All the Hodge-Tate numbers have multiplicity 1. Thank you. I missed anything else? I think not. Okay, so we want to apply. So in a compatible system, the basic thing here, if you have a compatible system of polarized regular L-adic representations, then this should apply for almost all L. Basic principle. So now we want to apply it in this situation. And for almost all L, this condition will be fine. This condition will be fine. The irreducibility of the residual representation, well, that takes a bit of work, but using ideas of Michael Larson, in a compatible system of L-adic representations, somehow for most L, the image is as big as it could conceivably, there's some sort of independence of L, and the image mod L is as big as it conceivably could be compared to the image in characteristic zero. So in fact, with a bit of work, this can be checked. The hard part is this polarizability. Because although we have polarizability for the whole of RL pi, there's no reason to suppose that we will get polarizability for the individual factors. One could well expect that Ri, complex conjugate, as I say, the whole RL pi will be self-dual, but we could have something like Ric is Rj dual, psi, epsilon, cyclotomic character to the 1 minus n. Well, this was a character coming from pi. So somehow what we need to do is rule out possibility, is so that in such a situation we must have I equal to j. And we're going to do that by looking at the Hodge-Tate numbers. So if we had such an equality, the Hodge-Tate numbers at tor of Ric Well, what I was trying to say. These will be the Hodge Tate number. Well, sorry, let me step back. It's yeah, exactly what I had written is actually very hard to control, which is why it wasn't what I should have written. But the trick is that we actually going, if we have such an equality, we also have an equality of the determinants. Dimension of Ri, which is the same as the dimension of Rj. And now I'm going to take the Hodge-Tate numbers here, the Tor Hodge-Tate numbers. This will be the Hodge-Tate numbers. When you have an algebra, there's a classification of algebraic characters. We're now in the case of a character. And then it's known that if you have an algebraic character, the Hodge-Tate numbers of the complex conjugate is going to be the weight minus the complex, the Hodge-Tate numbers of the original thing. So this will be the weight times D, that would give the weight of the determinant, minus the Hodge-Tate numbers at Tor of Ri. And on this side, well, we get minus the Hodge-Tate numbers at Tor at Rj, and the weight of this thing, or the Hodge-Tate numbers of this thing, but again we have a these all come from F plus, so the Hodge-Tate numbers are essentially the weights, and we know what they all are. So in this case, it's D Hodge-Tate number of psi plus D 2D. Getting this right? No, maybe D. Sorry. But the Hodge-Tate numbers of these things are related to the weight, because if I go back to this equation, tells you about, relates the weights and the Hodge-Tate numbers, so you get 2W is twice the Hodge-Tate number for psi plus 2n minus 1. So this is the same as this. We get the equality, I should have put here. So we get the equality of this term and this term, but this is just the sum of the Hodge-Tate numbers of Ri equal to the sum of the Hodge-Tate numbers of Rj. But those are both subsets of the Hodge-Tate numbers of R pi. And by our extreme regularity assumption, if we have such an equality, we must have the Hodge-Tate numbers of these two things being equal. But just by regularity, in here, wherever it's gone, in the RL pi, each Hodge-Tate number occurs only once, so if it occurs in RI and RJ, they must be the same. So this implies that I equals J. So indeed, by this trick, in the extremely regular case, each irreducible constituent must be conjugate self-dual, and that's enough to apply this theorem, which one can then show, be used with this L-function argument to show that indeed there was only one irreducible constituent to RL pi. Okay, so I'll stop there. Sorry? For small values of n, I think people have results. I'm not sure. Anybody in the front know exactly which values of n it's known for? So Toby says it's known up to 5 if f is totally real. But I mean, those methods aren't going to, they're not robust methods somehow. They they depend on accidents in small dimensions. Yeah, well, the answer is I don't know. I mean, it's tempting to think that there should be some argument analogous to Deline's argument for L not P, but I certainly don't know how to carry out such a thing. But maybe there is, I don't know.